If you love Star Wars and love the excitement of chasing your favorite Star Wars collectibles, the Star Wars Digital Card Trader Collecting app from Topps is for you. Collect and trade with friends new and old through the Star Wars Digital Card Trader Collecting app from Topps. These are the cards you're looking for.
This is Master Obi-Wan Kenobi. I regret to report that both our Jedi Order and the Republic have fallen. Our future is uncertain. But in time, a new hope will emerge.
Coffee with Kenobi presents Rebels Reactions with Dan Z and Corey Club.
All troopers, focus your fire on... on the Jedi.
Come with us. Learn what it truly means to be a Jedi.
I'm in space! And I'm about to die!
We need an opening.
Found one!
What did he say?
He said hello, hyperspace. Oh, and guess what? This is the podcast you're looking for.
Welcome to Rebels Reactions, everybody. This is your host, Aaron Harrison. Man, you know, I say this every week, but I mean it more now than I honestly mean it every week. These episodes just keep getting better and better with each passing moment. So no different for this week, as we have Secret Cargo that aired, and that's what we're going to be breaking down today. Great show. And joining us for our discussion today are two good friends of mine. First off, making his Rebels Reactions debut is Mr. John Fowler. John, how are you doing today?
I'm doing awesome.
Awesome. Great. Happy to hear that. I'm happy you're able to join us. Of course, also we have David Motters making his return. David, how's it going, my friend?
Good. Really good. I'm glad to be on with you guys.
Well, definitely. It's great to have you both on. And we got a lot to talk about in this episode, because we see pretty much the birth of the Alliance in this episode, which is exciting. To see get going. It brings us a step closer and closer to Rogue One and to A New Hope with each episode. So definitely a lot of fun. But before we get into breaking down the episode and seeing what's going on in Secret Cargo, we need to discuss for a second just the news that came out early late last week. The news really everybody has been waiting for and chomping at the bit for. And I was honestly, I will say it, I will admit, I was a bit skeptical. I wasn't sure I was going to get this news, and it bothered me. But we got it, and that's all that matters. We have confirmed Season 4 for Star Wars Rebels on Disney XD coming this fall. Ugh. Did y'all breathe a sigh of relief like I did?
Absolutely. I was, of course, talking to you a little bit, and I was sweating it, especially because, you know, in previous years, they had announced the following season really early, and this one they waited so long. So I was sweating it, and yes, I breathed a sigh of relief.
Yeah, I did too. I was like, man, is this going to be, are they going to end it season 3? But they announced 4, and I was like, okay. That's awesome.
It definitely was. I had even mentioned it in the last episode of Rebels, and of course on Legends Library when I guested on that a few weeks ago, and even on another show I did. We took that topic came up, and I was like, you know, it just makes me nervous. We haven't heard it, because you're right. Normally we hear in November of the previous year what's going on, and it took so long for them to get the news out, and I don't know why they waited so long, but you know what? We got answers. There is going to be a season, and now we have something even more to look at forward to come Celebration Orlando. They said they'll, of course, give us more teasers of what's to come in season 4 then. So definitely something to look forward to. And of course, Rebels Reactions will be there to bring you that news as it breaks during Celebration Orlando as well. So it's going to be great. Now, John, David, are y'all going to be at Celebration?
I will be there weekend only. I have a wedding coming up, so I got to save most of my vacation time for that. But, yep, I'll be a Saturday and Sunday, so I'm crossing my fingers that the Rebel panel will be on Saturday.
Excellent.
Yeah, and I'm going to – oh, sorry, Aaron. Nope, sorry,
you're
John.
Good. You're good.
No, I'm going to be there all 4 days. I'm gonna absolutely gorge on Star Wars morning, noon, and night. And just like John said, I really hope they continue that trend of having the big Rebels panel on Saturday. That'd be great to see that again.
Yep, definitely. I'm looking forward to it as well. This will be my first celebration, so I am quite excited to say the least. My schedule is not as nailed down as everybody else's yet, because it's going to, with it being Easter weekend, it's going to be a little rough. I do have prior commitments that I have to take care of for the weekend, but I will definitely be there with grins going from ear to ear for sure. So it's going to be a lot of fun, a lot of great Rebel stuff going to be coming out at Celebration Orlando. So check it out. If you haven't gotten your tickets, get your tickets. Time is running out. So let's go ahead, guys, and jump on in here. We have the episode Secret Cargo this week that came out, which was definitely, like as we mentioned earlier, basically gave us a new look at what is coming from the Rebellion as it begins to come together and form the alliance that we know in A New Hope, and of course Empire Strikes Back and Return of the Jedi consecutively. So we see a lot of great things happening here. Of course, it opens up with the Rebels hiding in what appears to be just a debris field, waiting on their person to get there that they're supposed to be meeting. And they, of course, get interrupted by an Imperial spy, and they show up, wind up getting that destroyed as the ship they're meeting and supposedly refueling shows up with their quote-unquote secret cargo. But unfortunately, the droid got this message out, the Imperials came, the ship was destroyed, and the secret cargo was transferred to the Ghost, and of course, that winds up being the Senata Mon Mothma. Then, of course, it's a matter of getting her where she's going and keeping her out of the hands of the Empire as they get chased down by the new TIE Defender, which Thrawn throws at them, which is fun to see that in action, especially after all the video games I played as that ship. But it was fun to see that on screen. And, of course, they do wind up escaping. But definitely a lot of fun because we get to see a lot of people from Rogue One, from A New Hope, just starting to make appearances in this, and a lot of fun. So let's go ahead and get this discussion going. And John, since you're our newest member of the panel when it comes to being on reactions, you're making your debut tonight. Let's start with you, my friend. What were your first thoughts after watching this for the first time?
I'd have to say it was finally, we finally got to see the actual Rebellion, not just, you know, not just the Phoenix Squadron and all them. We actually got to see everybody. It was like, they're all there. Anyone you saw in Rogue One, I mean, they were there and you saw them and now you're like, oh, now you're starting to like put the pieces of the puzzle together in terms of the large story.
Oh, exactly. And it was definitely a good feeling as you begin to see the Rebellion form and come together. Because for so long we've known the Alliance for what it was. And then with Rebels, we see just a small picture of the growth. David, what was your opening thoughts, first thoughts when you first saw this?
Yeah, just to piggyback on John's, I wrote in my notes here, just, you know, more of a precursor to Rogue One, more tie-ins, and to kind of actually bring together everything we were just talking about in terms of Celebration, Season 4, and this particular episode, one of the things that I'm hoping for is, you know, considering everything they showed with the Rebel Alliance, that on Saturday at Celebration, if they, you know, they'll show a clip, and I'm hoping by the end of season four, unless they want to do season five, I'm not going to complain about that, that they show the Battle of Scarif from the Ghost Crew's point of view. I would go nuts if they do that. Okay. So I'm just geeking out over here about the possibilities. So could you imagine that? A shot from the Ghost, you know, just while Admiral Raddus's ship is up there, the Profundity and all those other ships flying around, and it's all from the perspective of the Ghost Crew. That would blow my mind. So that's what I thought about when I saw this episode initially and what I'm hoping for coming up here in April.
I definitely have to agree with you, my friend. This is an exciting episode because we do get that glimpse of what we're starting to see come together. And knowing that season four is coming, and it just opens the door wide open to things that we're going to see. I know even when Rogue One first came out, even Dave Filoni even said the possibility is there that we may see Scarif from the Ghost point of view. So obviously it has been discussed. So who knows what next season will bring. It's exciting. For me, my first thoughts when I watched this episode was, wow. I will be perfectly honest. When I first watched this episode, I watched it without any sound. I was reading the closed captions. I was at Busch Gardens and I was watching it on the Disney XD app. While in line, so I couldn't hear anything because it was so loud. So I was just reading everything at the bottom of the screen as I watched it. And even with no audio, it was such a powerful episode. And then when I got to rewatch it with the audio and just hearing Mon Mothma deliver her speeches at the beginning and then right there at the end brought even more depth to the episode. So phenomenal movie episode altogether, in my opinion, from the first time I watched it. Now, let's go ahead and get into discussing Mon Mothma, because, of course, we've always known her, of course, from the movies as a leader of the rebellion and somebody that everybody looks up to. And even from the prequels, the senator who was still off with Padme and Bail Organa, as the Emperor was taking over, is not being thrilled with the perspective, and so we know her stance, where she stands and where she ends up as in Return of the Jedi. So seeing her, of course, in that Senate speech there at the beginning, where she basically just really lets the Emperor have it. Calls him everything calls him out on everything. And no holds barred, basically just puts a big bullseye on her head. Was a phenomenal speech. What was your first impressions of that opening speech that she gave, David?
I loved it. I just like you said, It's very inspiring when you see somebody go up against the big bully, you know, and she's doing it. And kind of like Pablo said, this episode is historic. It's a historic moment in the series because of what she's doing there, and finally calling him out for what he is. I thought Zeb's comment was very appropriate too. He was amazed that she's even breathing at this point. And so it just very awe-inspiring. And I just loved it. Like you said, the first one and the last one, but I know we're focused on the first one right now, but just absolutely enjoyed it.
Oh yeah, definitely. It was a great speech and it was really enjoyable. John, with her speech and her calling out the Emperor, she basically calls him little more than a lying executioner, imposing his tyranny on everybody. Seb said it himself. He's surprised, and David brought that up. I'm surprised she's still breathing. The lady's got guts. I mean, Mon Mothma just took a stand that outside of these little rebel cells, nobody in the Senate had been willing, honestly, to take vocally the way she did. How do you think that, I mean, knowing that where she winds up going, of course, definitely what were your thoughts and opinions on her speech and her timing of the speech?
I think when I first started watching this episode, I was at work, and I think I vocalized an "oh snap" when I heard what she said. And I mean, we as viewers know the actual true power of Emperor Palpatine. You're kind of led to believe that the other people don't know who he really is, with the exception of Vader. So you have this, you know, regular Joe woman. She basically says, you know, to this ultra powerful, you know, Sith Lord, you know, you're a scumbag, basically. And I'm just going in like, oh man, like she doesn't know who he is. We know, mm-hmm. but she doesn't. And you're like, this, there's some serious cojones there. I mean, she calls him out. And not even in private, in public, in the Senate, amongst all her peers in the Senate. And, you know, it was a mic drop moment for her.
Oh, yeah. Oh, absolutely. I could definitely. Can you just picture her in the Senate chamber when she's done just, you know, taking the mic and just dropping it in her little floating oval or circle thing that she's in? But definitely, you're right, because nobody really knows the extent of who or what Palpatine is. And those that do are either super close to him, like Vader. I would even put, honestly, I would even put Tarkin in that circle as well, as knowing, because he was there from the beginning. And I think he was able to put two and two together the way things go, especially the way he is able to command Vader, as you see in A New Hope. So I think he is somewhat aware of who Palpatine is, but everybody else that knows who and what he is are in hiding. Obi-Wan Kenobi, Yoda, these are people who know who he is, but just are not coming out. They know he's a Sith Lord. They're not going to come out. They don't have the ability to come out and speak out against them because of Order 66 and the marks on them at that point. They're wanted criminals. Some of them are not even surprised they're alive. So definitely bring up a good point, John, in that for her to stand up the way she did and not know who Palpatine is definitely makes this even more of a gut move, because. And honestly, I never even thought about it like that. And I'm glad you brought that up. That's why I like doing this show. New perspectives, new ideas. That's why I love these discussions. So we see that. And of course, then everything gets interrupted. We see the return of the Imperial, basically probe droid, essentially. It's the one that we saw in an episode a few episodes ago, the one that came to Chopper Base that Zeb and Chopper and AP-5 had to take down. It looks like the same design droid based on the Quarry drawings of 3PO. So it was good to see that thing return. So definitely fun there. Now, one thing I noticed watching this episode, the junk pile that they're hiding in, essentially, did some of the insignias on the debris, were those Separatist ships? Did y'all notice?
Oh, definitely. Definitely. Yeah. And in the episode guide, it says that they are, it looks like a Separatist dreadnought that, lots of, the hull and, broken up pieces and stuff like that, but definitely the Separatist insignia on there.
Okay. Perfect. So yeah, I noticed that insignia right off the bat. It was definitely I found that quite interesting that they were hiding out there and seeing that type of debris lying around, which definitely made it quite fun. Another nod to episode, or to the prequels, and of course to the Clone Wars as well, as that happened. Let's take a look here, because after they take care of the droid, and of course everything happens, the Empire shows up, ships get boarded, and they wind up being now on a new mission. Instead of refueling the Senator's ship, they wind up going and having to escort her to the meeting. She says she got to get to the meeting, and of course Hera's like, the meeting? And you see her perk up when that happened. So how many people, I mean, definitely this obviously is something under the grid, but you got to think their Empire's got to have some kind of win if it's that big of a meeting. Do you think it's something that Thrawn and the others are looking out for at this point, David?
Oh, definitely. I think with Hera's response, too, you could see it when they're hiding there in that debris field. She's like, what's it doing out this far? And it feels like that light cruiser and some of those TIE fighters were nearby as well. Like they didn't have to make a big jump to get there. But, yeah, it definitely feels like Thrawn and his followers there are key on this possibly happening. This the meeting, the get together.
Exactly. And definitely we find out the meeting is going to happen finally. And it's an exciting meeting because we'll go into more details of what happens at this meeting later on. But the Senator, of course, has the probably a very distinctive escort, let's say. It's an escort that we are quite familiar with, honestly. We see Gold Squadron make its debut on Star Wars Rebels. Gold Squadron you did see in Rogue One, but of course you know it originally from A New Hope under the command of... his name just left my mind.
Dutch Vander.
Dutch Vander, that's it. Hey, that name just, I don't know why that name just left me. But Dutch Vander makes his debut on Rebels, which is quite exciting to see a young Dutch Vander in this episode, as he and his Y-Wing squadron are the escorts for Senator Mon Mothma. And we wind up getting Ezra in one of those Y-Wings as well, as one of his pilots are injured aboard the Ghost when the Imperial shows up. And we get Ezra just basically doing combat maneuvers in a Y-Wing. Seeing him pilot a ship, I don't know about y'all, brought kind of some memories back to me, reminiscent of seeing Ahsoka in her fighters, and gave me some more Clone Wars feel, because we don't see a lot of fighter activity for our crew. It's usually they're hand-to-hand combat, blasting with their blasters, or they're on the Ghost fighting for their lives. We don't see them outside of Hera in individual fighter situations, flying an individual fighter. What were your thoughts on seeing Ezra and how he handled that Y-Wing, John?
My first thought was it looks like he's been taking lessons from Hera. I even believe she even kind of addressed that. She's like, remember what I taught you. So not only is he being trained as a Jedi, he's also being trained as a pilot too. So he has like two of the best teachers in the galaxy, it seems like. And I love Y-Wings. They're like my favorite Star Wars ship. So I like this episode. I mean, it was a great episode, but seeing the Y-Wings, that was, I'm like, yes, finally.
it was nice to see what those Y-Wings could do. And definitely because we are limited in what we see them do in A New Hope and Empire Strikes Back, Return of the Jedi. We're limited on the viewings of those. And even in Rogue One, they were focusing more on the X-Wings that were in the combat than of course, Gold Squadron. Now, of course, we know Gold Squadron is part of the Death Star attack, so we know they survived Scarif. So definitely that's good to know. But we have Vander being a part of this episode. They're not too fond of our Ghost crew. They think they're reckless and basically just cause more trouble than honestly they're worth. What were your thoughts on Vander's thoughts on our Ghost crew, David?
Yeah, it seems like kind of like a little hinting that the writers are doing, is hinting to, you know, just the difficulties of bringing these different cells together. Everyone has a different idea on what to do. Even, you know, Zeb and Ezra are saying, what do you want us to do? And of course, Dutch Vander makes his comments. So does the other pilot there. And then Harris steps in and makes some comments. And then even, you know, Pablo in the Rebels Recon talks about how even in Rogue One, obviously we see it in the movie, there's a lot of disagreements on how to deal with the Empire. And so this little interaction in the in kind of the hold there of the ghost seems like a, you know, like a precursor foreshadowing of the difficulties all these different cells are going to have to get along.
Oh, definitely. And we know there's going to be issues with them getting along, because we see that from Rogue One when they're arguing around the table about the plans to attack Scarif and what's going on there. And they're discussing the Death Star. And even with the whole storyline with Saw Gerrera, we know that all the cells don't get along. Because even Saw was kind of pushed out because of his over extremist ways. So we know there's going to be that conflict there, and they're doing a good job even writing this into the episode. But it is something that for at least the case of Dutch Vander, is overcome really easily by the end of the episode. Because after going through his trials through the episode in the Y-Wing with Ezra, overcoming the TIE Defender and saving the Senator and basically taking out two Star Destroyers, two Y-Wings versus two Star Destroyers, and the Y-Wings win. How did that happen? But it did, which was awesome. But we see at the end of the episode, Dutch Vander's opinion pretty much has shifted at that point. He's more, even tells Ezra, you can fly with my squadron anytime. Because he's proven himself. For me, you know, it was a nice nod to Ezra. But to me, when you're got your mind made up on somebody the way they portrayed him, it's to have it there at the beginning. It's kind of unbelievable that it would change in 22 minutes to that extreme. What are your thoughts on that, John?
Yeah, I thought it was a little quick that he just, you know, all of a sudden changed his mind, like he did a complete 180 on his original opinion. But I mean, maybe combat changes you, you know?
That it definitely does. That it definitely does. Now, David, of course, I know you have a background in psychology. Okay. So yeah. I always get psychology and psychiatry mixed up. So I wanted to make sure I got the right one out there.
That's right.
So you have that background, and of course, breaking down Vander's basically flip flop at this point in his opinion of the crew. From your professional perspective, how does that sit?
Well, this was always the issue with Anakin, right? Between episodes 2 and episode 3, and how does he make this switch from being with Obi-Wan and the Jedi to, you know, participating in the death of Mace Windu and so on and so forth, and choking Padme. Obviously, the Clone Wars tried to tease that out a little bit, but just like you guys said, I've been noticing this in the last couple of episodes, is that what do they call it? Narrative license. It's almost like just kind of like easy storytelling. And like both of you mentioned, there's only 22 minutes to do this. I think yes, if you go through something more difficult and easy and the person has your back and they help you, it does make the transition easier. But I still feel, I'm consistent with John and with you, that it's a little quick from a psychological or a non-psychological perspective, but I've just noticed some of the it's the line they're trying to do. And I thought about this when I was listening to your episode last week, Aaron, that you did with Eric, You know, they're trying to tell a very sophisticated story with Thrawn, you know, through Imperial eyes, but they have fun kid stuff in it, but then also the stuff for us older adults, you know. So looking at this and to specifically answer your question, I feel it's more on the kids side to say, hey, you know, here's Dutch Vander and Ezra as friends by the end of the episode. So again, they're trying to do kind of like what Looney Tunes did when I was a kid, right? We've talked about this, right? You know, I watch it when I'm 6, 7, 8 years old and I'm laughing at the jokes and I'm like, hey, why is my mom and dad laughing at this? And now that I'm an adult and I watch these episodes again of Looney Tunes, I'm like, oh, that's what they were laughing at. They had stuff in there for adults. So I think, you know, this one, it is quick and it's a little bit more for the kids, it feels like.
Oh, I would definitely agree with that. And there's a lot of things that can be debated about that. I mean, about that, but definitely it worked out for the story they're telling to work out for that switch to be made. And to basically prove too, it proves that these different cells can coexist. And those changes can be made to show cooperation between them, and that opinions can be changed. So definitely we got a lot more to talk about in this episode and a lot of great things to discuss. Before we do, though, we're going to take a few moments here and toss it to Dan and Corey, who are going to tell us about the Topps Star Wars trading card app. Dan, Corey, take it away.
If you are a huge Star Wars fan, and let's face it, if you're listening to this podcast, you probably are. And if you love collecting Star Wars, the Star Wars Card Trader app from Topps is for you.
The best part, the Star Wars Card Trader app features incredible images from the original trilogy, the prequels, the Clone Wars, Rebels, and The Force Awakens. Every era you love is included on the app.
It's easy and a lot of fun, too. Beloved characters, key scenes, and unforgettable moments are in every pack. Open the app every day and get free credits to spend on card packs from the Cantina, trade with your friends, and make new ones along the way as you continue to add to your Star Wars collection. And it's all free.
The variety makes it fun, too. So chase what you love. Some of the latest packs include poster series, classic comic book series, helmet variety packs, and so much more. There are even exclusive cards you can get by completing sets, as well as special inserts and even autograph opportunities. Don't worry about missing the cards you love either. As you sign up for notifications right on the app.
The Star Wars Digital Card Trader Collecting app from Topps can be downloaded for free from iTunes or Google Play. Be sure to download the app and start your collection today.
The Star Wars Digital Card Trader app from Topps is available now. And remember, these are the cards you're looking for.
Welcome back. Thank you so much, Dan and Corey, for telling us all about that Star Wars trading app. It's a lot of fun, a lot of great cards, a lot of great artwork. If you love Star Wars and you love collecting cards and you just don't have a place to keep them like I do, that is probably the best place to go. A lot of great things, and you can definitely trade just like you would in real life. You can trade, you can do card runs, the whole nine yards. If you do decide you want to participate and you do want somebody to trade with, don't hesitate to look me up. Big Dog Stewie's the username. I will trade with you. And if it's something Rebels, you're trying to, if you give me something Rebels, 99% of the time I can guarantee you're going to get what you want. As long as it, yeah, pretty much is how that works with me. So bring it on. Let's get download the app, have some fun, and a lot of great cards in there. Still some Rogue One sets still going out. And I'm sure come Last Jedi, we will be seeing some new sets from them as well. So a lot of fun there. But let's get back to our discussion on Secret Cargo. Because this is definitely basically a story-changing episode for the Star Wars universe as we see the birth of the Rebellion. Now, I know earlier we were talking about Mon Mothma and we were talking about her speech there at the beginning where it was basically just, you know, gave whatnot to Palpatine via the Senate because of a certain incident on Gorum, where the people of Gorum were essentially massacred. And of course, didn't have time to research it or look some stuff up to find out what that was about, what was going on there, to see if there even was anything in the Star Wars universe. But apparently you did some looking up on that, David. What did you find out?
Yeah, well, you and I have talked about each time we're on here to watch Rebels Recon, but this was in the episode guide. And, you know, they have three different galleries. They have the episode gallery, the trivia gallery, and then more of the, what is it, like the behind the scenes, how they design characters. And this was in the trivia component, the trivia gallery. And it mentioned that when Mon Mothma mentions Gorman, she's speaking about the Gorman massacre. And this is sourced from the 1990s Rebel Alliance source book. And it's considered an inciting incident that really got people upset with the Empire and got people starting to think of putting together an alliance and going against the Empire.
Okay. So you could say it would be kind of like their version of the Boston Massacre, which, you know, started our whole revolution against the British Empire, from the sounds of it.
Very good. Yeah, that's the way I was understanding it. You think so, David?
Oh, definitely. John just mentioned that, I think that hits it perfectly. It sounds like what they were trying to describe back at that time was a lot of imperial oppression. But once that occurred, that was enough to tip it over, similar to what John said with the Boston Massacre.
That I like that analogy. I'm glad you mentioned that. And I'm glad you had that information. The episode guide definitely has a lot of good information in there, just like Rebels Recon does. So definitely check that out after each episode. It's definitely worth a look, because you always walk away with more knowledge about what you just watched than before. So definitely a lot of good information there. Now let's take a look here at the return of the TIE Defender. In this episode, of course, on the way, as after they escape the initial Imperial attack, the Ghost is escorting Mon Mothma to Dantooine, to the meeting of all meetings, per se, when it comes to the Alliance. And they're going to take a shortcut through the Achaean Nebula. Basically, it's the route of least Imperial resistance, or so they think. But of course, you know, when you got a tactical genius like Thrawn, nothing is as easy as it's going to be. So he deploys the new prototype for the TIE Defender. And of course, with the hyperdrive and shields and whole nine yards, which was phenomenal to see in action. But also, did y'all recognize the name of who was flying that TIE Defender?
Oh, definitely. Volt Scaris, right?
Exactly. We had the return of Volt Scaris. No, not Tom Scaris from Top Gun. Volt Scaris, even though he did inspire this guy. Volt Scaris, of course, was the commandant, let's say, of Sky Strike Academy, which is where Wedge was attending, and Sabine infiltrated to get Wedge and Hobby out. But he is now apparently Thrawn calls the best pilot in the fleet, which is why he's flying the TIE Defender. Now, I believe we've had this conversation before, David, about the old video games there, which debuted the TIE Defender originally, TIE Fighter and games like that. Have you played any of those games, John?
No, I have not played. I think the latest Star Wars game I played was Shadows of the Empire. They weren't on there, but it is in the X-Wing tabletop miniatures game, and I dislike them very much because they're really hard to beat. So it's good to see that it carries over from the game into Rebels.
Oh, it definitely does. I mean, it was hard to beat in the TIE Fighter, game as well, just so you know. But yeah, this was nice to see this ship in action. I mean, it was shooting on all axes, all axes. It was just a phenomenal ship to see in action, and he doesn't hold back. He pushes his ship to the limit, and even Gold Squadron doesn't even know what to think. I mean, he destroys Gold Squadron lickety split. To the fact that Dutch Vander and Ezra are the only two remaining Y-wings left. He just is taking them all out left and right. How did you feel about seeing the TIE Defender? What are your thoughts on the TIE Defender in action, David?
Oh my gosh, nervous for them. In fact, right now I'm looking back to that discussion we had. That was back on an Inside Man. When they revealed that was the episode where you and I talked about that. I didn't get a chance to play any of these games, but man, like I told you, I got to go back and play all these games. You guys get me geeked up about these things. And I'm looking at what Henry Gilroy said back in that Rebels Recon. And he says, Thrawn's ahead of the game. And he says, if he can get enough of those TIE Defenders built, mass produced, the Rebels are in deep trouble. And then Pablo followed that up with saying, with the shields, the hyperdrives, all that stuff, they equal the odds between X-Wings and TIE Fighters, not, you know, those TIE Defenders and Y-Wings. So, like you said, Aaron, those Y-Wings really struggled with it. Wonder if X-Wings, at least per what Pablo and Henry are saying, would be a little bit more evenly matched. But the whole thing that I was thinking with watching it in action was, if they had just one more of those TIE Defenders, obviously my perception would be is that Ezra and Dutch Vander wouldn't have made it, and I think the Ghosts would have been in bad shape as well.
I would definitely have to agree with you with that, because that was not an easy fight for them. And we knew from the episode Inside Man that it was, if the ship got produced, it was going to be a problem. And they proved it right in this episode, because this was literally, you would think, you know, one TIE fighter versus all these Y-Wings should have been easy, but it was, the Y-Wings were at the disadvantage, unfortunately. I mean, they're more of a slower bomber type fighter versus the obviously Defenders, very aggressive, very fast, very high tech. It's Thrawn's design, so it's what you would expect from a master tactician like him to be able to design something that is going to wipe everybody out. Now, riddle me this. Now that we see the TIE Defender in action, and now that the Rebellion has seen the TIE Defender in action, do you think this will bring us into the world of X-Wings on Rebels? John?
I don't know. It's a good question. I will say that if I do see the X-Wing and Rebels, I'll totally be geeking out. It's a good chance. I mean, you know, Mon Mothma saw it, so she's going to be like, hey, we need something to combat this. Y-Wings aren't going to cut it. Neither are A-Wings. So maybe the B-Wing?
Well, the B-wing was we've seen how she fights. I mean, even the B-wing is a bomber type fighter. It's got some speed, but it's not. It's more of a heavy attack type fighter. It's not. You know, the A-wing is designed for speed. The B-wing is designed for payload. Then, as is the Y-wing, essentially is designed to be a bomber. I don't see it. I don't see the B-wing matching up to the Defender. David, your thoughts?
Well, piggybacking off what both of you are saying, I just wonder, you know, over this season, they've been building up to this attack on Lothal, and of course, in that episode, An Inside Man, they learn about that TIE Defender. And of course, you hear Ezra, you know, tell the other Y-wing pilots to look out. And because of what it has with the shields, the hyperdrive, and so on. So I wonder if, again, the end of this season, or at some point, not only involves that Obi-Wan and Maul confrontation, but an attack on Lothal and that, you know, I guess back to that those particular factories, so that it isn't mass produced. And I guess I'm just scraping through my mind. I guess we don't see them. We don't see them in the Battle of Endor, do we? Up in the sky there, up in space? I don't believe we do.
No, we don't.
Okay. So maybe that all fits then, right? That maybe those are destroyed and Thrawn's plan, at least there, is thwarted. And then it keeps continuity pretty clean, perhaps.
Mm-hmm. Definitely, I can agree with that. I mean, we still have the defender. I mean, obviously the plans are out there. Who knows? Maybe they were on Scarif and they got destroyed. We don't know. Because we do know that's where they keep all their top secret plans and stuff. It's definitely their big database. That's why they went to get the Death Star plans. It could have been something that was a possibility of being mass produced. And we know the attack on Lothal is coming. And we'll have to wait and see what happens. When that happens, I believe that's coming up near the season finale, if not the season finale or beginning of now season 4. We'll hopefully see that attack on Lothal on the base there and see what happens. But the question is, I know this is the prototype that we see, but normally when you produce one, you have another one not too far behind it. I wonder how quick they're able to turn these guys out. Because it hasn't been too many episodes since the Inside Man, when we saw this. So be curious to wonder what the turnaround time is on that. And the fact that too, correct me if I'm wrong. I don't remember seeing that ship get destroyed in this episode.
No, I think they ionized it and it kind of like pulled the Darth Vader and flew out into space to, you know, come back some other day.
Yeah.
So it's still out there. So it is still out there. Who knows what that's going to do to our heroes as they come up. So definitely that's going to be something to have to keep an eye on as time goes on, is what happened to Vault Scaris and that TIE Defender. Will we see it? Will we see it again? And if so, will it return in greater numbers? So, well, we're coming up toward the end of the episode as they're making their escape. The ghost makes it through the nebula, all beat up, and we see only it comes out only to find that there are a 2-star destroyer sitting there waiting for it under the command of Price, Governor Price, who had basically begged Thrawn for the opportunity to take care of the rebels. And he basically granted it, and of course had to take Admiral Constantine along because he wanted a military commander there. But we've seen Constantine pretty much since season 1. How competent of do you think this guy actually is, David?
Well, I don't know. I see him as maybe a couple steps above List, you know, from last week's episode. You know, he just Lieutenant List gets worked over pretty good. I feel like Thrawn looks at Constantine and is just thoroughly unimpressed. You know, just the way Dee Bradley Baker voices him, it just feels like they're going for the bumbling Imperial who just can't get it done, you know? Yeah. So that's the feel that comes across from the voice acting to the way that he's drawn, to the way Thrawn looks at him. That's kind of my impressions.
Okay. Definitely. He's not a person I've been too impressed with, to be perfectly honest. through the seasons of watching Constantine, he's been very, to me, inefficient in his command styles compared to some of the other people. So I'm not quite 100% sold on Thrawn sending him and Price out to combat the rebels and bring in Mon Mothma alive, essentially. But definitely they do, and things are working out for them quite nicely, as they are actually, it's just the two destroyers on the Ghost, and the Ghost is tore up after coming through the firefight with the Defender, and of course the Nebula is not an easy pass to go through, and they lock onto him with a tractor beam after, you know, giving him a chance to try to surrender, which we knew they weren't going to surrender. But they lock to him on with the tractor beam and are pulling him in. And that's when we see Dutch Vander as well as Ezra come out of the Nebula as the only surviving members of Gold Squadron to the rescue at that point. And they actually use very ingenious way to rescue them, because in the episode you hear Hera mention not to use the proton torpedoes in the Nebula because it will ignite the gas, cause a flare, and cause big explosions, and everything goes boom. And they don't want everything to go boom. So they wind up using the strategy of targeting the Nebula to cause basically a giant solar flare to take out the Star Destroyers. And they're able to accomplish this not once, but they're able to do it twice and take out both Star Destroyers. Pretty ingenious tactic at that point. But to me, not on the 100% believable. You know, honestly, the whole tactic, it reminds me of Star Trek, honestly. I do believe I saw that in a couple episodes where they targeted the sun and caused a solar flare to blow up an enemy ship that they couldn't beat. So yeah, it happens. I remember a two-part episode in particular that where that happened. So yeah, so very much Star Trek move there. There's my reference for the show.
I was just going to say that you got to get one in.
Got to get one in. I'm just trying to remember the name of the episode. It was in the latter season with it was a two-parter when Lore took over the Borg. I don't remember the name of the episode. It'll come to me eventually. But definitely, it was a very, very reminiscent move. Using that solar flare to severely... They didn't completely destroy it. They just severely damaged the Star Destroyers. Now, what did you think overall of the particular maneuver that they did in this particular attack? David?
Well, this is where, you know, I thought about this journey through the Nebula. This is one of my thoughts on this whole thing, and kind of bear with me for a second. I kind of wrote a few notes to myself, and here's the psychologist in me coming out. But the journey through the Nebula reminded me of what they call a couple different names when people are in the belly of the whale, or I think of the cave on Dagobah when Luke goes down there. It's also been called the Night Sea Journey, kind of these mm-hmm. transformational kinds of experiences that people have. And one of the first things I thought about when I was watching the episode was I went back and I'm like, wait a minute. In season one of the Clone Wars, it was the third episode. It's number 7 chronologically, right? You know, they've got the little differences, but it was part of that Grievous arc. The first Grievous arc is called Shadow of Malevolence. And yep. In that one, you remember it, right, Aaron? It had the Kalita Nebula, and there's Y-Wings, right? Anakin's in it, and Shadow Squadron and all that. And so this was very much reminiscent of that. You know, both are nebulas. You go through something challenging. You come out the other side. And in essence, it's dangerous, and you come out hopefully different. And so it's this whole transformational kind of thing. And one of my thoughts I was going to mention is that even though we don't have Jedis and lightsabers and stuff in this per se, and even Ezra's in the role of a pilot, not necessarily Jedi-like, we very much have this mythology. And so to bring it up to the question you asked, I think about them coming out of the nebula, and I think very much of an homage to Han coming and helping Luke as he's trying to destroy the Death Star, like kind of like this against all odds kind of thing. And I think you mentioned it, Aaron, towards the beginning of this episode, the idea of two Y-wings defeating two Star Destroyers. It's like, how, what? I mean, you know, and so that's where it, a little bit more the mythology, the beating all odds, Luke, you know, shooting down the reactor shaft, you know, and blowing up the Death Star. And so that's what I kind of thought about with this move. You know, it's like all hope is lost kind of, and Hera's saying, and she's apologizing to Mon Mothma, and all of a sudden here comes Ezra and Vander out of the nebula. And so, I mean, I think it's cool. I mean, it's a cool move. It's unbelievable the color and the effects that they put on those Star Destroyers as they're burning up from the side there. It's just unbelievable. I wanted them to show it more, but they cut away. But but again, I think it's pretty cool. I think it's a little bit of what I mentioned before, the adult part of it versus the kid part of it as well. But I thought it was overall a neat kind of, I thought, tribute to Han Solo helping Luke in A New Hope and kind of them escaping by the skin of their teeth.
Very good. Very good. Mm-hmm. Very good. I like that. And definitely, I can definitely see that correlation, that connection, that where that nod could have been made. Absolutely. That's one thing I love about Rebels and about our creators and our writers and everything when it comes to Rebels is they will put these nods in without even a second thought. And we see that through the episode. Through the series, I should say, and which makes it a lot more enjoyable, especially for people who grew up watching the movies. So kudos to them. Great thoughts. I love it. Let's move a little deeper. As we're wrapping up, we want to talk about, of course, the second big speech of the night by Mon Mothma. Her first one, of course, she was basically giving the Emperor whatnot for her for everything that happened at Gorum, as we mentioned earlier, and definitely called him, basically has been dubbed a traitor ever since. So, and everything just kind of spirals out there, and of course, we wind up making it to Dantooine, escaping the Imperials thanks to what happened there. And she gives this very eloquent speech, just a transmission there, in which she basically announces her resignation from the Senate. She calls it corrupt. She calls the Senate manipulated by the sinister tactics of the Emperor. And basically, she just no hold bars in her speech. Basically is saying that she's no longer going to just sit by in the Senate and try to fight things there. She's moving basically to the front lines of the rebellion to fight for everybody because she can't get anything accomplished basically in the Senate. Very moving speech, and we get to see a lot of things going on during the speech. Now, when it comes to the content of the speech, John, what are your thoughts on Mon Mothma's basically her final speech of the night in this episode?
It was a great rallying cry, basically. She basically summed up their grievances and said, we have all these like grievances, we should all get together so we can combat this ultimate evil in this whole universe. You know, she's, again, to borrow historical, she's kind of like the rebellion's version of Benjamin Franklin. You know, Benjamin Franklin wasn't a general or a soldier. He was a statesman and a politician. And, you know, he went to go get aid from France and all this. This is basically, in my theory, is what she's going to be doing. She's going to be grabbing all these cells and bringing them together, saying, we need to do this, we need to do that, we need to form together and ally together. And that's, to me, that's what she's representing almost.
I definitely agree with that. David, what are your thoughts on her final speech of the night?
Yeah, I wrote down her last sentence. And of course, I love Genevieve O'Reilly, her voice. Obviously, her portrayal in Rogue One, but then hearing her voice, I watched the episode 3 times, and each time I'm watching the character animation, but I'm just really seeing Genevieve O'Reilly portraying Mon Mothma, and I love how she does it. Her voice is so calm, and but yet it's so commanding. And the last sentence is, "This, my friends, this is our rebellion." I love how she ends it. I had that really good feeling as you see one ship come out of hyperspace and then you see the other one start pulling in. Again, I do feel that again, even though it feels like it's the Alliance versus the Empire, I really feel that mythological thing, even without Jedi and Sith in this. And in fact, I wrote in my notes under mythology is in this episode, even though it doesn't seem like it's front and center. I wrote down Mon Mothma's speech, that last one. I felt that there's a kind of a mythological quality to it, bringing a lot of people together to defeat something. And so those are just a few of my thoughts on that last speech. But I also would say this. You always mention, Aaron, Kevin Kiner's work, and the audio cue in the episode guide is Mon Mothma's speech. That's what it's titled, Mon Mothma's speech. And at the very end of her speech, right, you hear that slight introduction of the Star Wars theme, right? And it just starts to well up, and then it goes to credits. And so I was geeked up. I was ready to join her. And be part of the Rebel Alliance myself. So just really, really well done.
And I agree. And I'm glad you brought up Kiner's music, because, again, he does another phenomenal job in this episode. And I was going to ask if anybody else caught that slight riff into the Star Wars theme there at the end, because it was definitely incorporated, which definitely added just more excitement and depth into the episode at that point. But also, I need to take a moment. We need even take a nod to the art and production department, because the visuals in this episode were outstanding, especially there at the end with the final combat situation where they used the Star Trek technique to blow up, to damage the Star Destroyers, and that solar flare coming out and the way it impacted the Star Destroyer. That whole sequence was visually stunning. So kudos to them as well as it went on. And her speech was very moving. And as we see ships just dropping out of hyperspace all over the place, blockade runners, the medical frigates that we come to recognize. I even believe I saw Mon Calamari cruiser, one of the new ones from that we see in Return of the Jedi in there. Of course, we see that carrier that the Rebels stole earlier in the series, that Imperial carrier, as we see. But then during her speech, we get a nice glimpse of everybody watching her speech, not just the Rebels crew who's standing out there on the bridge of the Ghost watching her. But it begins to cut to different locations. It cuts to Chopper Base, and we see Commander Sato and Rex and the crew there. It cuts to what we would assume is Alderaan, because we see Bail Organa, we see General Daldana, which was awesome to see General Daldana in this clip. And we just see it just start cutting around to different parts. We see Lothal. And we see people just, you know, really getting into her speech at that point, which led to all those ships arriving. And definitely seeing everybody in their elements again brings us one step closer to Rogue One, because I don't know about you, when I saw T'Danna sitting next or standing next to Bail Organa, I had a geek out. I'll admit it. I geeked a little bit there in the line at Busch Gardens. how did y'all feel about seeing our characters start to pop up left and right through that speech? Because that definitely made it more powerful as we got to see others watching it. David?
Yeah, it was really cool. Like you said, seeing T'Danna was really neat. Filoni mentions that, they've been on a lot of crazy adventures. And it's good to see him there. Ryder Azadi, right? We see him on Lothal. Yeah. And it looked like they were at Joe's, you know, the Ithorian there that's voiced by Debo Bradley Baker. And I just wondered, I saw some other Rebel pilots and I thought, man, are they – I was a little confused, actually. I'm like, wait, are they okay to be there at Joe's? I mean, if there's Imperial pilots and it's Imperial occupation, and I don't know, maybe Joe's is enough outside of town to be okay and stuff. But it was good to see Ryder Azadi there, and then the other thing was is seeing, you know, all those ships appear. It's above Dantooine, and of course I think of Carrie Fisher, you know, and her talking to Peter Cushing in a New Hope, and you know, and she lies to him, but kind of, you know, the Rebel base is on Dantooine, right? She says that, and they go there and check, and sure enough, there were some remains of a Rebel base. But in the episode guide, it says it is the first base for the Rebel Alliance. Mm-hmm. So that was kind of neat. And that Mon Calamari cruiser, it does say in the episode guide that that is home one, the design. So, mm-hmm. So there you go. Yeah.
So, yeah, definitely a lot of fun in that there. I was scratching my head about the same thing there about Joe's after when we see Ryder Azadi, because we see an A-wing pilot standing behind him, and I'm sitting there going,
right,
that's Lothal. There shouldn't be any A-wing pilots on Lothal.
Right?
Why are we seeing it? Unless Ryder Azadi has been evacuated from Lothal, and we haven't been privy to that information yet. But he did appear to me. He looked like he was at Joe's on Lothal. But then it begs me to question why we have A-wing pilots there, or are these just pilots dressed like A-wing pilots? But they looked pretty much like A-wing pilots to me that we've been seeing. When it comes to seeing everybody, same question I asked David, John. When it came to seeing everybody, T'Danna, Organa, Ryder, Rex, and Sato all listening to the speech, did that make the scene even more real for you?
It did. Like I said earlier, it feels like the Rebel Alliance now. Like, you know, we've been following this group and, you know, they've told us this is the story of how the rebellion happens. And we're like, yay. And then, you know, you're at season three, you're getting the payoff. And now you're seeing all these people come together. And then it's going to just lead right into Rogue One. So you're just going to see this one marvelous story happen. Like, I was totally geeked out. And then when the ships came, it kind of reminded me, like, you know, almost as if, like, you're the lone warrior on the battlefield facing off against incredible odds. And then you hear the cavalry or, you know, coming behind you. And you're like, yes, we can do this. We can win this battle. That's almost like what it kind of, like, to me, it symbolized just a little bit.
It is the birth of the rebellion, and it basically, well, not the rebellion, but of the alliance. And it felt, honestly, each episode's becoming a little bit more like home, because we're getting closer to what we saw in A New Hope and the original trilogy with the Rebel Alliance. So each episode has felt a little bit more like home for me, and I've enjoyed it thoroughly. I really have, and this has been a great episode to review and discuss. It's definitely just so much packed into this little bit of episode there. Now, one thing do want to take a look at is here. I got an email. Actually, I got a second email. I just got an email popping up here about this episode while we're talking about it. So I know we got two emails here I want to read real quick when it comes to Secret Cargo. The first one is from Andy Billard. Andy said, "This has to be one of the most suspenseful episodes of the season." I have to agree. This episode had me on the edge of my seat from the beginning of the episode when the Ghost Crew are chasing down the Imperial droid to the speech of Mon Mothma at the end, rallying the rebellion. Every moment had an impact. It was great to see Hera and Zeb again, since it feels like forever since the last time we had an episode centered around them. Not even just centered around them. It's been forever since we've seen them. I'd have to agree, Andy. It's been forever since we've seen them. Then he goes into Thrawn. He goes, Thrawn seems to be consistently be a step ahead of each turn. It's pretty incredible how vast his knowledge of the universe is and where and how his enemies might move in a different situation. Unleashing the TIE prototype on Gold Squadron did quick work of their pilots and made me worry for Ezra as their numbers depleted quickly. This really shows the severity of how important it was for the Empire to shut Mon Mothma down quickly. That thing does not mess around. One aspect of this episode I really enjoyed was the brief glimpse into the politics going on at that time. It reminded me of some of the Clone Wars episodes, which gave a broader picture of the universe. And I want to stop there for a moment, because he brings up a good point, because she had just given that speech, and from what we understand at the beginning of the episode, very recently. And she had basically, the Holonet said she had shocked people, the Senate that day, and shocked people by her treasonous remarks against the Emperor. So that had just happened. And basically, I guess at that point, she was snuck off of Coruscant at that point to make her escape. But how quickly the Empire is moving to silence her at that point, because she definitely is talking out against the Emperor. She's definitely moving against her, and basically empowering a rebellion that they're probably trying, knowing how their propaganda machine rolls, probably denies even very much if the rebellion even really exists. So definitely he brings up a good point in that they did react very quickly to silence Mon Mothma and try to catch her, which definitely is a good thing. To wrap up his email, he just says, "When it comes down to it, though, Hera and Ezra saved the day. Ezra by using the Force to let Gold Leader know when to shoot the proton torpedo, and Hera by some quick thinking, having the proton torpedoes shot into the nebula. It does seem like this really impressed Mon Mothma, and you clearly see how Hera is on her way to her promotion she gets in Rogue One. Of course, as we know, in Rogue One, she's a general. And overall, another great episode. I'm looking forward to the rest of the season." Then he asked the question, "Do we think Governor Price makes it out?" I'm going to say yes, I believe she did, because we didn't see the Star Destroyers actually destroyed. They were just severely damaged. Any thoughts on that, guys?
Any thoughts, John?
I originally thought that Thrawn is a very calculating tactician. He had to know that the layouts of the Y-Wing, what their payloads are. He had to figure, I mean, I'm almost convinced that he sent those two out there because he was getting rid of dead weight, what he considered dead weight. And, you know, he knew from the last episode, he knew Kallus was the spy, and he was willing to let a basically innocent officer take the fall just so he can flush him out. I mean, I'm convinced he sent him out there hoping that, you know, Hera would do what she needs to do. They would do something with the nebula, and he'd be getting rid of two basically deadbeat officers. Not an officer, but an officer and a governor. But maybe not. I don't know.
Ooh, very cold. Be a little sadistic for him, but yeah, I like it. Definitely, it's it does go along with his character, where he would be cutting off that dead weight that's holding him back. David, thoughts?
Yeah, I was just wondering, you know, like we were just asking, and I watched it three times. I guess my impression was, is that, like we said, the TIE Defender, I believe that thing is fine. That Volt Scaris probably pulled out of the nebula with that. My impression of those Star Destroyers, you know, the first couple times and even the third time I watched it tonight, was that those were close to destroyed. I wondered if they were going to show, you know, some escape pods being jettisoned off of those two things, because they looked really bad. But I guess, like you said, they were really damaged, not slightly, but very much damaged. But I do think we'll see both of them back, and probably getting a good tongue lashing from Thrawn.
I'm definitely sure we'll see them back. I mean, from my point of view, when I watched the episodes, they were definitely severely damaged. I didn't peg them as being destroyed, but definitely heavily damaged. So definitely, I'm pretty sure that we will see them again, Andy. And thank you so much for your email. Another quick email that literally came in as we were getting ready to start our email section. We got an email from Alex Dunn, and basically says, "I like this episode for the fact that it shows the very origin of the inception of the Rebel Alliance. It was also a nice surprise to see Gold Leader Vander also in the show. As always, Hera's piloting skills saves the day, as well as help escort Mon Mothma to Dantooine. Kind of makes you wonder if these actions are would allow Hera to be promoted to general by the time of Rogue One. It was also fun seeing the TIE Defender, but I was hoping that the ship received more airtime. Thrawn has always predicts every single move of the Rebels and is just closer and closer like a cat and a mouse with each episode. With Season 4 underway, kind of makes you wonder about the future of Thrawn also. Also makes you wonder where Darth Vader has been this entire season." That's a very good question. We have not seen Vader since his duel with Ahsoka. That's correct. So it definitely brings up the question where he has been. I'm sure he's having to recover and take care of some things for old Palpy there. But yeah, we haven't seen him. Makes me wonder if we'll see him coming up in Season 4 as it goes on, and what the future will hold for Thrawn as Season 4 goes through. So definitely a lot of questions to be answered, but you know, these are questions we have to just kind of wait and see how it goes. But let's go ahead and wrap up our discussion on Secret Cargo. John, we're going to start with you. Let's get your final thoughts on this episode.
This was a great episode because it's really tying. I said this earlier. To me, this episode really progressed the overall story. I mean, it just kind of like put it in a gun and shot it out of a gun and said, "There you go, we're progressing the story." You know, all the other stories are kind of progressing the story of the season, but this one, in terms of the overall, it just like sent it in a warp drive and said, "We're going." Oh, did I just say warp drive?
You said warp drive. We got another Star Trek reference. Thanks so much.
I meant to say ascend it into hyperspace.
Hyperspace. Don't worry about it, man. Don't worry. I'm known for my Star Trek references in this show, so. excellent. David, what are your final thoughts on Secret Cargo?
Yeah. Just like John said, I think all the tie-ins to Rogue One and pushing the story forward, I just absolutely love that. That seeing the forming of the Rebel Alliance, seeing Dantooine, Gold Squadron, Dutch Vander. I wrote down, I felt like there was action at every turn, danger at every turn. It was cool to see Ezra in a Y-Wing. And, you know, and then like I mentioned before, a big draw for me to Star Wars is the mythology component. And it was in there. Like I said, this going through the nebula is, like I said, reminiscent of a lot of these other archetypal kinds of things, you know, the Joseph Campbell types of lessons that George Lucas learned from him. I love seeing those kinds of things, that coming out of something difficult, transformed. So that was really neat. And maybe the last little final thought, the fun thing was that, Chopper has a turnoff switch. So I thought you'd like that, Aaron.
Oh, tell you, that broke my heart. Yeah, everybody knows how I feel about Chopper. I love Chopper. Chopper is the man. Chopper's the greatest. You know, everybody assumes, you know, BCR2 has an off switch. 3PO has an off switch. You know, we just kind of assume Chopper would have one. But the fact that they would use it on him, just, you know, even though it was to, you know, save their lives. But, you know, they deactivated Chopper. But when he was reactivated, and of course Mon Mothma was now on board and everything, after being deactivated and reactivated, did you notice a change in his attitude?
They put him in his place. They said, listen, you get too cantankerous, we're turning you off. And they did it, and he's like, whoa, these guys mean business.
they did. I mean, definitely he's... you could tell his actions definitely responded to being deactivated. So it was definitely one of those features that I didn't think we'd ever see on Rebels. But hey, you know what? Chopper was deactivated, so be it. But at least we got to see him in action. So he was on the screen. So. Final thoughts for me. I mean, this was a great episode. I said it at the beginning of the episode. I don't see how they can top themselves week after week the way they've been doing. This has just been a complete and total. I mean, when you say when and I've said it before, they are in full gear, and they have it in drive, and they are the gas pedal pressed. And we are flying to the finale. I mean, this isn't just, you know, a stroll to the finale. This is high gear, punch the hyperdrive, Chewie. This is it. We are flying to the season finale. And the episodes just keep getting better and better each week. I loved seeing the birth of the Alliance. Seeing characters from Rogue One with T'Donna and so forth making their appearance. It was well done. It was nice. Mon Mothma's speech was phenomenal, both of them. So definitely it was quite enjoyable, and I'm happy we got to see it. Grading the episode. Of course, we do grade each episode here, A, B, C, D, or F. You know, honestly, I don't think I ever recall anybody getting lower than a B on any episode, but hey, you know, it could happen. Let's grade the episode. David, let's start with you, my friend. How would you grade Secret Cargo?
Well, I keep going back to Twilight of the Apprentice and what that contained with Vader and the epic battle with Ahsoka, the build up to that over all of season two, the Sith temple on Malachor, Kanan being blinded, just huge, huge episodes there, those final two. And so I think of that as being the A+. And so, you know, I, like you said, this one is as good as it gets as well. I think it's slightly below that Twilight of the Apprentice. So I'm going to go with an A-.
Okay. A-. And John, how about you, my friend? How would you grade this episode?
I'm giving it an A because Y-Wings, Rebellion, and Y-Wings. And it was just awesome.
It's all you need, my friend. That's right. There are some Y-Wings in there. Everything's good. This was a great episode. And, you know, it's sitting here week in and week out watching these episodes, breaking them down and see how they build up and how they connect to each other and play off each other. It's grading these are getting harder and harder and harder. Cause you know, not everything can be an A. But yet these episodes are so good. It's hard not to grade them anything, but, I definitely, this had a lot of fun things in it. And having the birth of the rebellion is really what, of the Rebel Alliance essentially, is really what had its appeal. And definitely it was a great episode. I was beginning of the episode of our discussion, I was leaning more toward a B+ for this particular episode. But after the discussion and some of the things that were presented, to me, I would have to go with an A- on this. And definitely it was a great episode. And I thoroughly enjoyed it, and I can't wait to see what else is to come. Next week's episode, of course, is Double Agent Droid. It's a Chopper episode, folks.
You are in your glory, Aaron. Oh,
I will. This will be a day long remembered. I live for these episodes. So we get my Chopper focused episode coming up next week. So look for a 4-hour special on a 22 minute episode. Just kidding. I can't imagine Dan's face if I sent him a 4-hour episode on a 22 minute episode, but you know, maybe worth it, but it is Chopper we're talking about. But next week's going to be a great discussion as we discuss Double Agent Droid, the Chopper focused episode. I promise you it will not be 4 hours, 3 hours, 59 minutes, maybe, but not 4 hours. But, so definitely a lot of great things coming up as we go on. David, of course, if somebody wants to continue the Star Wars discussion with you off the air, how would they go about doing that?
Oh, definitely. Yeah, real simple. My first name, David, _, and then it's my last name, Modders, Modders.
Excellent. And John, if somebody wanted to discuss Star Wars with you, whether it be Secret Cargo or anything else to do with the saga, what is the best way for someone to contact you about that?
You can find me on Twitter as Star Wars Hockey Fan FL.
Very good. Very good. And, of course, if you wanted to continue the discussion with me, of course, you can hit me up on my personal Twitter, TAHarris121079, or you can email me, aharris@coffeewithkenobi.com. Or, of course, definitely let's talk Rebels on the Rebels Reaction Twitter as well, @RebelsReactions. Remember, folks, we do have our Rebels prize pack giveaway going on right now. Of course, Alex and Andy both got their emails in, so they are in the drawing as well. So definitely there's still a couple episodes left for you to get your entries in. All you got to do is email us your thoughts on the episode of Rebels to our Rebels Reactions email address, which is rebelsreactions@coffeewithkenobi.com. We do have... of course, some great things. We got 2 3¾-inch action figures that were given away: the Sabine Wren and the Kanan and Stormtrooper figures, both of which were recently released. We got the Ahsoka Tano Hot Topic exclusive pop vinyl by Funko. We're giving away. We've got the Saw Gerrera Toys R Us poster, which I got from Toys R Us, which broke the Saw Gerrera news back in December there. So we got those to give away. But we just got something new in that we're adding to the pot. So you're hearing it here first for the first time. We have for this giveaway a Hot another Hot Wheel that we're going to be giving away. This particular Hot Wheel, actually, it's a couple years old. It actually came out around, I want to say, season one. But it is basically just a race car Hot Wheel. It's carded with the original Rebels poster on the card. Great piece. I'll have a picture in the show notes for you. But if you want to be included in the prize pack drawing, just send us your thoughts each week after each episode. The deadline for entry is March 20th. That's coming up quickly. That will get you through the season finale, but the last episode before that, which is the episode called Twin Sons. I can only imagine what that's going to be about. But so that'll be another 4-hour discussion. But
Dan's going to love you.
Dan is going to love me. He is, you know. But we love Dan. But it's all fun and games. It's all fun. But no, definitely some great episodes coming up to get your thoughts and opinions and get involved in the drawing. I want to give stuff away just to say thank you for listening. And I'm going to say it now. Thank you, everybody, for listening to Rebels Reactions tonight. Thank you, John. Thank you, David, for joining me. It's been a privilege having you on and discussing this episode with you. Always welcome back at any time. It's always fun to discuss Star Wars with friends, and that's what we do here at Rebels Reactions. Thank you guys so much for joining me.
Thanks for inviting me.
Yeah, thanks, Aaron.
Oh, my pleasure, my pleasure. And everybody, thank you so much for listening to Rebels Reactions. Again, I'm your host, Aaron Harris, and I just want to say, remember, this is the podcast you're looking for.
Well, kid, you pulled it off.
Was there ever any doubt?
Yes.
Chopper, get us out of here!
If you would like to respond to our question of the show, have a comment, or just want to say hello, send us an email or MP3 at feedback@coffeewithkenobi.com. Or if you have a specific question or comment for either of us individually, email us at danz@coffeewithkenobi.com or coreyc@coffeewithkenobi.com, or visit us at coffeewithkenobi.com and click on the Contact Us section or comment on one of the stories featured on the site. If you enjoy the show, please write a review in iTunes or Stitcher. You can also like the show on Facebook at facebook.com/coffeewithkenobi, as well as keep up to date at our Twitter feed @coffeewithkenobi. You can also find us on Tumblr at coffeewithkenobi.tumblr.com. If you enjoy the jazz music, the album is Eye to Eye by Steve Torak.
This is Spectre One. I need a lift.
This podcast is not endorsed by the Walt Disney Company or Lucasfilm Limited. It is intended for entertainment and informational purposes only. The official Star Wars website can be found at www.starwars.com. Star Wars, all names, sounds, and any other Star Wars related items are registered trademarks and or copyrights of Disney and their respective trademark and copyright holders. All original content of this podcast is the intellectual property of Coffee with Kenobi unless otherwise indicated.
This is the podcast you're looking for.
There's no one here. Move along.
If you love Star Wars and love the excitement of chasing your favorite Star Wars collectibles, the Star Wars Digital Card Trader collecting app from Topps is for you. Download the free app from iTunes or Google Play and collect your favorite images from the classic 1977 Star Wars cards to Clone Wars, Star Wars Rebels, The Force Awakens, and much more. Collect and trade with friends new and old through the Star Wars Digital Card Trader collecting app from Topps. These are the cards you're looking for.